Welcome to the 441st episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. Stay tuned for my interview with crime writer S.A. Cosby, author of the crime novel Razorblade Tears. Stay tuned for the interview. Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is S.A. Cosby, author of the brand new crime novel Razorblade Tears. Sean won the 2019 Anthony Award for the Best Short Story for The Grass Beneath My Feet, and his previous books include Brotherhood of the Blade, My Darkest Prayer, and his previous novel, Blacktop Wasteland, was a New York Times Notable Books of 2020, and it received huge acclaim from numerous writers and publications. Sean, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. So glad to be here.
Yeah, sure. If someone listening hasn't yet heard about your new novel, Razorblade Tears, how would you describe the novel?
Basically, it's a novel about revenge and redemption. It's about two fathers, one black, one white, seeking to avenge the murders of their married gay sons and also redeem themselves for their mistreatment of their sons, as neither one of the fathers was very accepting of their son's sexuality.
And do you remember the original idea that led you to write Razorblade Tears?
It's a twofold idea. The initial idea was writing about men of a certain age and about how they deal with the consequences of their actions from the mistakes they've made. And the second part of that came about from a personal situation. A good friend of mine, who's a gentleman about the same age as I am, came out to his parents a few years ago, and it didn't go well. And his pain and disappointment really resonated with me and stuck with me. I couldn't shake it. And so I wanted to try to answer some questions about that situation that I had. And for me, the best way to answer those questions was to examine them in a novel.
And so I'm curious, what are your earliest memories of reading and books?
Oh, man. My earliest memory is my late mother teaching me the word siesta and mirage in a golden book, children's book. And that's my earliest memory. And I swear that's around 4 or 5. But and after that, I grew up in a household that, despite our living situation, we were incredibly poor when I was a kid. But despite that, I grew up in a household that was surrounded by reading and readers. My grandmother loved trashy romance novels. My aunt loved horror novels. My mom was a big reader of folklore and biographies. And I had an uncle who loved pulpy detective books. And so all of that was always swirling around me at all times. And I just absorbed it all. I'm a voracious reader as well as being a writer.
And who were some of those early writers, before you even started writing, who were some of those early writers that you enjoyed reading and made a big impact on you?
Oh, man, I think some of them were like John D. McDonald, Raymond Chandler, Chester Hines, Stephen King, Clive Barker, Richard Matheson. Some of the early horror writers were big influence. I won't say influence, but I enjoyed them quite a bit. August Derleth, Robert Bloch, folks like that. And then as far as some of the other writers, oddly enough, my grandmother was a huge fan of Sidney Sheldon and Judith Grant. And as a young man, I just liked reading those books for the saucy bits. But they were also an influence on me. And they really teach you how to write for entertainment purposes. All books should be entertaining, but those books specifically have a market and an audience that they're trying to reach. And I know some people will be disdainful of books like that, but there's a lot to be learned from folks who are selling millions and millions of copies.
What was your own path to publication for you, to writing and publishing your first short stories and then your first novel?
Oh, man, it was a long and circuitous route. What a strange trip it's been. I started writing seriously when I was about 19. I was writing back when you still had to send your short story with a self-addressed stamp envelope if you wanted to get it back, in the days before email. And it was a lot of rejections. But it was the weird, anybody who's written can tell you this, though. It was the weird positive rejection. This isn't right for us, but we would love to see something else. Or this doesn't work for us, but you definitely have talent. And so those rejections, numerous as they were, I always took those as a positive, because someone recognized that, you know, there was something about my writing that was interesting. And even though it wasn't for, I never got a discouraging rejection. I never got someone who said, stop writing. You don't know what you're doing. but, and so I just stuck with it over the course of my life. And then about 10 years ago, I tell the story a lot and it sounds made up, but I swear to God it's true. About 10 years ago, a friend of mine who was a belly dancer went to New York City, and she, after her performance with her troupe, went to a bar in the West Village called Shade. And this bar was managed by a guy named Todd Robinson at the time. Todd Robinson was publishing his own books, but he's also publishing a great quarterly magazine of hard boiled crime stories called Thug Lit. And she talked to him about my writing. I had actually written a fantasy novel at the time that wasn't really going anywhere. And so anyway, he suggested to her to suggest to me to write a crime story and send it in because he was always looking for new writers. And I did that. And that's when things just clicked. I just found my niche. And it was one of those things where I wasn't trying to be a crime writer at the time. I was trying to be a fantasy and horror writer. But something about crime writing just clicked with me. And then luckily it clicked with readers. And that story got published and another story got published and so on and so forth.
And I'm curious, have you thought about going back and trying to write a fantasy novel? Or at this point, have you committed to crime?
Oh, man, I always think about it. I actually got the opportunity. I'm going to be in two horror anthologies later this year. I've got a horror story coming out. And an anthology that's dedicated, or not dedicated, but that's about a horror anthology that takes place in the Joe Lansdale world of his novel, The Drive-In. And I've got a horror story coming out with the Horror Writers Association of America anthology. And I've got one coming out with them. So I've actually had the opportunity to revisit that, those roots or those things that were my first interest as a writer. And there's a part of me that would love to maybe take a year off and sit down and write a expansive fantasy novel. I don't know if I'm gonna get the chance, but I'd love to do it.
We need an S.A. Cosby fantasy novel, I'm just saying.
I think so too.
Well, as you were working on getting your first short stories, and you were, as you said, you were working on stuff that wasn't necessarily crime, but as you were working on your early writing, was there any specific challenges that you had to overcome or figure out in the writing itself, whether it was characterization or plotting?
I think for me, the biggest thing was, and if you listen to my critics, I'm still having a problem with it, is I have a tendency to go really dark and really over the top. I like extremes. I don't like half measures. And my writing tended to be incredibly dark and intense sometimes. And the benefit of having good editors like Todd, like the editor I work with at Flatiron now, is that there are people who can pull you back from the precipice at the same time without compromising what you're trying to say. And so that was my biggest challenge. I always thought if you're going to blow up a building, blow up three. And so it's like, and so I sometimes got to pull back from that. But I don't think I ever did that as a way. I think I was doing that initially as a way to hide what I felt like were my shortcomings. I didn't think I was that great at character. And my plots are not, I still don't have world-changing plots. I think Jack London once said, I'm a pretty good elaborator, and I kind of use pyrotechnics sometimes. But what I've learned as my writing career has continued is that I'm actually stronger at character than I thought. The things that I thought were weaknesses in my characters are the things that readers are sometimes drawn to. And so I've been able to create a certain style and tone that seems to be similar to other writers that I admire, but also, hopefully, wholly my own.
As I mentioned earlier, your previous novel, Blacktop Wasteland, came out last year in the middle of the pandemic and also in the middle of yet another American reckoning with racial violence and racial equity in the U.S. I'm curious, as an African-American writer, how do you feel about kind of representation at this point in the crime fiction world?
I think it's getting exponentially better. I think, not to be too cynical, but I think the publishing world, which the crime writing world is a subset, is, you know, at the core, it's a business. And they're seeing books that value diversity, representation, characters, not caricatures. And they're seeing that these books sell. There were two books on the New York Times bestseller list last year, written by authors of color, female authors of color, Britt Bennett, The Vanishing Half, and Silvio Moreno Garcia's American, Mexican Gothic. And those books were great sellers, and they're also great critically received books. And so I think the publishing world is seeing that there is a market and an audience for stories written by, for, and starring people of all types of marginalized groups, not just people of color, but characters that are LGBTQ, characters that are non-binary, characters that are not traditionally part of what is the usual air quote literature movement, rural stories from the American South, the Southwest. And so I think that it is changing. I think there's still a long way to go, but I'm more hopeful today than if you had asked me this question 5 years ago.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Sure. In terms of your own writing process, has it been similar for you from novel to novel, specifically in the nuts and bolts? I'm curious, are you someone who does a lot of outlining and plotting, or do you start writing and follow the narrative? What's your process?
I'm not a pantser, but I'm not an outliner. I think I'm in between. What I do, and it works for me. I can't see it's going to work for anyone else, is I write myself a really good long stream of consciousness synopsis. It's sort of like a Finnegan's Wake, but just for me, and nobody has to suffer through reading it. And so basically it's just me telling myself the story. It's me getting the story beats down in written form so that I can see them and visualize them, because I'm a very visual guy, right? A lot of people say my style is cinematic, but I think that's just because that's the way I see the story. I see the story in my head, and then I describe what's happening. And for me, that's been my process. And so far it's worked. I think it's going to change up a little bit with my third one, just because I wrote Blacktop Wasteland. I had it written before we went to try to sell it to auction. And then while that was going on, while Blacktop Wasteland was out, I wrote Razorblade Tears. So all last year, I wrote Razorblade Tears. And so this is the first time that I don't have a book ready to go after another book is out. And so I'm going to try something a little different, similar process. I still got to write the synopsis for me, but I'm going to work on it in a different way with my editor. And we'll see. It may be better, because I think as a writer or anybody in any creative endeavor, you have to realize what your strengths and your weaknesses are. And I think this changing up the process a little bit will help my weaknesses. And one of my weaknesses, I believe, is, again, that sort of the New York Times called it, that go for Baroque tendency that I have. And I sort of want to maybe... The next thing I'm working on, I want to make it a little more subtle, a little more atmospheric, and maybe not as viscerally violent. I believe violence has a place in stories and in literature, and it has to be earned, and you earn it by writing good characters. But I may want to change things up just a little bit.
Sure. Given your success to date, what writing advice would you offer for listeners who are working on their own stories and novels?
I think it's a tried and true cliche, but I think it also bears repeating. Read as much as you can, because what reading does, it shows you what will work for you in your own writing, and it shows you what won't work for you. I love reading a book that at the end of it, when I close the cover, I'm sitting there gobsmacked, like, I could never do that. I would never do that. I would never think of that. I love reading books like that because they challenge me, but they also sometimes are able to give me pause. Wow, that person did that idea that I had way better than I ever could. So maybe I'll move on to something else. Maybe my strength lies somewhere else. Another thing I would tell people as far as advice, I think there's an idea that you have to write a certain amount of words every day. I don't ascribe to that. I don't think you have to write 1,000 words a day and 7,000 words a week. But I do think you need to write every day. But it doesn't necessarily need to be in the project that you're working on. You can write a social media post. You can write in your journal. You can write a note to yourself. I think as long as your mind is constantly engaged with the idea that you're working on, the idea of the story that you're trying to tell, I think that's better. I don't believe in taking like long pauses when I'm in a project. I don't think that is beneficial to the story. I like to have the immediacy of the story. I like to still be immersed in it. So that's probably the best piece of advice I could give.
And I'm curious if you've thought about it. When you sat down, and I think you said you were 19 when you submitted your first story, and you were going through rejections, and you said it was around a route to getting published. What kind of kept you going? What kept you submitting and sending out short stories?
The honest answer, spite. I'm incredibly stubborn. And at a certain, it's not personal, but I started taking it personal. And so at a certain point, I was like, I'm going to get published if only to show these people that rejected me what they're missing out on. Now, of course, as I've matured and I've become a more reasonable adult, I don't think that is the thing that drives me. But initially, that was the thing that drove me. I wanted to prove people wrong. I don't think that's healthy, but I'm going to be honest, that's what drove me. And it was funny because I think ultimately that was good for me to get that out of my system then, so that by the time I was 35, when I had my first story published, and I was still getting rejections, I didn't take it quite as personally. And I knew that I had talent, and I knew that I had the ability, and I just needed somebody to take a chance on me. And one of the first people to do that was Tyra Robinson. And once somebody takes that chance on you, that's all you need. It's just that crack in the wall, and then everything else will eventually fall in place. Now, don't get me wrong, I never, ever thought that my books would be mentioned in the New York Times or the Washington Post. I didn't foresee that, but I thought I would get published. I was thinking I'm going to get published, and I just never anticipated anything like this. It's beyond my wildest.
What novels or nonfiction books have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Oh man, I'll give you five real quick. Andy Davison's The Boatman's Daughter, a really dark, atmospheric Southern Gothic horror novel. I read that in 2 days. It's an incredibly, incredibly interesting, a culturally rich story. I really love it. I just finished a book by James D.F. Hannah called Midnight Lullaby, a pretty traditional P.I. novel, but with a interesting setting. It's set in West Virginia, Indiana, the Midwest sort of rural area. I'm not from there, but I recognize those folks in that book. I like to say that his book, Midnight Lullaby, and my book, My Darkest Prayer, are probably in the same church, but just different pews. I just finished P.J. Vernon's incredibly intense, I hesitate to call it domestic thriller, but his domestic thriller, Bathhouse, just an incredibly atmospheric and visceral, emotional roller coaster ride of a story that 20 pages are mind-blowing. So Bathhouse was incredible. I really loved it. I also read earlier this year a book by Michael Ferris Smith called Blackwood. Really and as a theme here, really dark but intense Southern Gothic novel, reminiscent of, I think, more so Flannery O'Connor than William Faulkner, but again, still in that same genre, in that same style, and I really enjoyed it. And it's something unusual that's out of my usual purview, but something I really enjoyed, The Force of Vanishing Stars by Kristen Harmel. A story that takes place during World War II about a young girl who helps prisoners of war escaping from the Nazis hide out in the forest, as she also is discovering some secrets about her own past. And that book was, again, it was a gift. Somebody gave it to me as a gift. It's not something I would usually pick up, but once I got into it, I couldn't stop reading it. And then a book from last year, but I talk about it a lot because I really love it, Winter Counts by David Heskell Nobley Whedon, a story about a tribal enforcer on a reservation in the Lakota Nation. And David is an incredible writer. He's the guy that is able to bring, again, that tropishness and reimagine it in a way that's new and fresh. So those are my books that I've read recently, recommendations. And anybody who's listening, they could do well to check those books out.
That's great. Where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your novels and books?
I need to make a website, which I don't have yet. But if you want to follow me online, I'm on Twitter a lot, at BlackLionKing73. I'm also on Facebook at S.A. Cosby Author. And I'm on Instagram under LeoKing73. One of these days, I'm going to get off my duff and actually make a website. But for now, that's where folks can keep up with me.
That's great. Again, we've been speaking with S.A. Cosby, author of the brand new crime novel, Razorblade Tears. The novel is available now, so go buy a copy. And Sean, thanks for doing this interview.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at HereYouAreAZ.com.